The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah! We're all back!
Yes, we are. And I am your host, Tim DLGG.
Yeah.
And I'm joined tonight by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
We also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
What were we called that one time? The Four Horsemen of the Comic-Apocalypse or something like that?
Only if you can pronounce it.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll happen when we all finally assemble at a Comic-Con and attend as an entire panel.
True.
That's right. We need to host a panel one day.
That's right.
I've seen a couple podcast folks do that recently.
So we could, that could probably be arranged. But.
And back joining us after being sick last week is at @PCN_Dirt on Twitter.
Welcome back, Dirt!
Yay! And I just hit 40,000 loops on Vine today.
Nice. Is that total of every Vine?
Yeah, on my Vine page, over 40,000 loops of comic review Vines.
Nice.
I think he's found a winning formula.
Hey, yeah. No one else does comic reviews on Vine. There's probably a reason for that, but nonetheless, I'm the king.
And
he's the king of Vine. There ain't none higher.
Oh, man. I should have put that in
there. To drop a vine, to drop a vine that's right on time.
Man, we are hitting the ground running today.
I will never do that again. I apologize to everybody. Lesson learned.
Oh, man.
I'm about to let you take over Vine. I need to start taking over Periscope.
Oh, yeah, you still haven't done that.
Yeah, I need to get on that. Not sure exactly what I want to do on there, but I can come up with something.
Yep.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account, @CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google+. You can find the Google+ page at google.com/+theclicknation. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/theclicknation. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're on, you can tweet at us using the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron.
I was about to say, except when we don't, like next week and the week after that.
Oh, yeah, the two-week break for the holidays. Well, it'll be 3 weeks. Well, I won't be here next week because Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're going to have to figure out what happens next week because I may have tickets. I don't know.
Yeah, but we'll have something. So.
Exactly.
We'll do the Lonely Leftovers podcast. Guys who can't go.
Either the editor or I decide to do a show on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, we might. Yeah, we might do.
Whoever's on can join.
Exactly, and we still owe the people a Treasury edition for all the TV stuff that has dropped within the last like 2-3 weeks. So
yeah, because I might have some feelings.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can find them at their website, cspn.us. And make sure to buy some merchandise, some Comic Book Chronicles merchandise from the CSPN shop. You can do that at redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Or just go to cspn.us, and at the top they have a store or shop tab you can click on.
Did you mention the RSS?
What was that?
Did you mention the RSS? iTunes?
Do we have the link somewhere?
I didn't put it in.
I had jotted it down somewhere because I didn't want to start pumping that on the show. I'll date that up later and plug it probably during the ad read. But yes, you can just subscribe specifically to the Comic Chronicles on iTunes. There's an RSS feed. Thanks to our good friend Classic for that.
Thanks, Classic.
All right, let's get to some cinematic news for the past week. Supergirl casts Chasing Life star as long-running DC Comics villain. Italia Ricci, who starred in ABC Family's Chasing Life, has been cast as Siobhan Smythe, or Smith, better known
Smythe.
To fans as Silver Banshee.
Cool.
Supergirl introduces the solar flare power.
Did you guys watch this episode? I did not. I did not watch it.
Not yet. Not yet. I like to watch it. My son likes to watch it, so I watch it with him. So nice. We have to wait for the time when we're both available.
I was about to say I haven't watched it. I'm definitely more than a few episodes behind now. But I thought this was interesting because I saw this come across social media.
Yeah, see, I saw it last week when it happened, or when the seed, we pretty much saw it happen, basically, because okay. the last episode was like, kind of went into it, and I was like, huh, that seems familiar.
Right, it's interesting that they would introduce this to, like, the general populace through this medium as opposed to, you know, the Superman movie.
Yeah. Well, he's got to it first.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who's this? Who's Cillian Murphy?
He played the Scarecrow in the Batman that guy? Movies.
Yeah.
I guess he'd be fine. Yeah, another person comes out and said, yeah, I'd like to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, pretty much, but he wasn't being used much in the Batman movies, so I figure, hey, maybe they'll give him a bigger part in one of these.
Yeah. Spider-Man has officially been confirmed for Captain America Civil War, as if we didn't already know that.
Right.
Well, we still don't know how, though. I mean, is he going to be in a big scene, or he could be like, hey, Spider-Man's been seen, you know, in a news brief and swinging by somewhere.
Yeah, we actually have to watch the movie to find that out.
I know, right? Shocker. Or we might not, because you know how things go around.
I start feuding hashtags so I don't get spoiled.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a rumor of Creed's Ryan Coogler in talks to direct Black Panther movie.
Interesting.
I did see Creed over the weekend. Great movie.
Good.
Green Lantern Corps concept art showed Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. Netflix's Iron Fist series finds its showrunner, and that showrunner is Sean Ashmore?
No.
Scott Buck.
That's right, Scott Buck, I'm sorry. I was like, that doesn't sound right. he being of 6 Feet Under and Dexter fame.
You know, we'll see. You know, now that the showrunner is in place, we'll see how long it is until we find out who is going to be cast as Danny Rand.
Yeah, there's still been, even as of a few minutes ago, there's been some debate about how that show's going.
But or will go. The rumors of it being made into a movie or a pushback appear to be false. There was a Star Wars International trailer with new footage that I didn't watch.
And it was dope.
Cool.
Good to hear. I won't be watching it.
they say it's kind of spoilered, and I guess it could be, but I mean, if you don't know the context for some of the stuff that happens, you don't really know whether it is or not. It does more of shots of the Falcon, let's put it that way. So
Sam Mackey.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
The Flash adds actor Tony Bell as Iris West's new boss.
It's Tone.
Tone.
Yeah.
I didn't even know she had a job. Or I forgot she had a job on the show.
But she hasn't really showed up that much.
Dude, she's a reporter, isn't she?
Yeah, but they haven't really given that much airtime this season, seems like.
Gotcha.
Not much. Matter of fact, that was probably the one major time to where she showed up in any prominent. Like, well, maybe twice, but that's probably the more prominent one.
Let's see what else we got. Wally West made his debut at the final scene in this week's episode of The Flash.
Okay.
We can talk about the mid-season finales at the end of this new segment here. We had a debut of the season 2 trailer for Powers, the PlayStation, was it Plus? PlayStation Network show?
PlayStation Network show, yeah.
From the comic by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Omen.
Which I subscribe to. I should probably watch it, you know.
I need to finish that, actually.
I need to finish Jessica Jones, still.
Oh! Yeah,
that too.
Dirt, did you watch it, Jessica Jones?
What? I started to. I didn't like it. It turned it
really?
Off.
Really?
Yeah. Never went back.
No. I guess you're not going to come on the Treasury Edition to talk about it.
I can. Hey, it sucks.
Tomorrow there's going to be an X-Men Apocalypse trailer released. Today was a teaser poster, motion poster or something.
But they couldn't get Jimmy Kimmel to do it tomorrow.
You might be live on air on Friday, or is that maybe. Just 2020 comes on?
Maybe.
Do you have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 trailer news in there?
No, why would I do that?
I enjoyed the trailer.
It doesn't look bad.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I mean, I'm sure it will be bad.
It still looks better than every Transformer movie.
Yeah, they made the trailer look nice. Put it that way.
That's not saying that much.
Yeah, seriously.
It looked like a Transformers trailer the first, 30 seconds of it, with stuff falling from the sky. And
but you got Arrow.
Doing Michael Bay things.
Yeah, that is right. He is in it.
Yeah, we got Casey Jones and Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah, I saw the images of Bebop and Rocksteady, so at least those are...
Yeah, watching them in the trailer is like when I was like, all right, I'm going to have to watch this.
Let's see, Ant-Man and the Wasp, to be different genre. Adam McKay may return. Frank Miller hasn't seen Netflix's Daredevil. And also Bash's season 2, Elektra. I guess.
Okay, Frank Miller of the Master Race, or whatever you say.
You worry about Batman for the next year and a half of your life. Gremlins director joins Legends of Tomorrow episode Night of the Hawk.
Actually, you skipped one bit of news that is rather important for fans of Stephen King. The Stephen King series Dark Tower. Idris Elba is the frontrunner for the lead of Roland Deschaine in the Dark Tower movie. So that's actually pretty cool, because there is a significant population that are big fans of that series.
Okay. There's an OC reunion as Melinda Clark is cast in Fox's Gotham, and I forget which one was Melinda Clark. Was that the mom? I need to Google.
I'm not sure.
I don't think any of us has watched the OC, so I'm pretty sure none of us would know.
Tim's watched the OC.
Yep, it's the mother. That's who I thought it was. She seemed like one of the people from the OC that probably would be cast on.
Dirt was right.
Yeah, I was about to say Tim's in that bracket, I guess. So.
Popular Fox show from the 2000s-ish era, I guess. That was right up my alley.
Sure.
This is news.
She was in Firefly and Spawn.
Wait, was she?
According Spawn. To Google Images.
Yeah, she was in Spawn.
Wow.
Okay.
The movie that was just as good as the comic.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'll take your word for it. I never watched the movie.
I remember the movie.
I hate to see the movie.
Oh, no!
I saw it in the theater.
Oh, no!
Oh, man.
Let's see. And Kate Blanchett is in talks to join Marvel's Thor Ragnarok.
Wow.
Somebody has to replace Freya.
Seriously. Kate Blanchett, man. You know, I mean, she's definitely already got plenty of nerd cred, you know, from Galadriel, right? Yeah. So.
So who is she playing?
The same role. Maybe she's playing the same role.
Possibly.
Nah, that'd be messed up.
Who knows? Maybe she'll be an enchantress.
I was wondering that, or some people saying Valkyrie.
Possibly.
But yeah, they have said Valkyrie was going to show up.
Possibly show up. Yeah, that's not a bad idea, a bad guess.
Sure, I'd be with it.
Yeah. All right.
So let's see. So before I get to our ad read, how many of us actually watched some of the mid-season finales of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Flash, Supergirl, and Arrow?
I caught part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., got home a little too late.
Yeah, I didn't see majority. I saw the last, 5 minutes of the show, really, of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I watched Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow. So.
I think I got spoiled on Arrow, but I'm not sure yet.
Supergirl had the OMG moment of the week.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, where certain big A-list player made their debut.
Hmm? A leaguer, some would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say A-list. I would say a leaguer.
Yeah.
Well, he was, if you watched a certain, he was prominent.
A very well-known character made
this. You're talking about a guy who currently has his own series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's barely holding on. It's a good by the fingernails. By the fingernails!
Yeah, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was. I was channeling Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday. By the fingernails, staying on. Yeah,
that was Al Pacino, huh?
No, but I was channeling.
I'll go back to doing Run DMC.
it's all about the what is it? The 5 inches that are right in front of your face.
Theater of the mind, folks. Theater of the mind.
Love it.
I know I saw a lot of people online saying that they had guessed at this person's identity. I guess I don't think I've been watching Supergirl close enough to know to have caught the clues, but still pretty cool.
Okay, I have been watching it. I don't remember seeing too many clues about that. I mean, and the one that stands up probably shouldn't be the case.
Wasn't it a swerve because the alter ego, the civilian identity is actually another character?
See, that's what I was kind of thinking. Yeah,
it was, right?
So they swerve people. And I read a bunch of interviews after the fact from the actor involved, and he was saying how he didn't learn about it until after San Diego or New York Comic Con, one of the two. So it's like he went in having tried to get into character playing one person and then find out later on it's someone else. So it just took a little adjustment on his side. So he went into kind of detail about that. So interesting stuff.
Cool.
And Arrow ended with the cliffhanger, of course, and Flash. Flash didn't really end on too big of a cliffhanger like all the rest of the shows. No, possible deaths or big reveals or anything like that. So, except for, I guess, Wally West coming and joining the Christmas party at the West House. So, still have to deal with the Zoom threat on that show. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., killed off a major character.
Well,
kind of revived that character all at the same time.
All at once.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, lots going on in the comic book TV world.
Yep. And with any luck, we'll have a chance to go in depth on some of this stuff and Jessica Jones on a soon-to-be, hopefully scheduled, Treasury edition of the Comic Book Chronicles.
Yep. All right, let's see.
You said ad read?
Yep. For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can check out such books as The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton, Jurassic Park 25th Anniversary Edition by Michael Crichton, and Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Comic Book Chronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Comic Book Chronicles for your free audiobook.
Yep.
All right. You said there was something clickbait you wanted to talk about, Roddy?
Oh, it was along with the news. So I guess if we're starting there, then yeah, there is going to be a Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe comic. By Aubrey Citizen. It's just an article talking to the writer, I guess.
There's going to be a 16-character tournament. Wow. Hadouken.
Exactly. And there's some a little bit of art and sprinkled in within the interview, but
interesting.
I would show it, but as an ad that might not be showable. That might not be worth showing.
Interesting.
But that's that.
Okay. Comic book news. Marvel's Apocalypse Wars event set to rage in 2016. So to coincide with the X-Men Apocalypse movie, the villain Apocalypse will be making his return to comics in 2016. And the announcement was made at a Brazilian Comic-Con experience panel. No details yet, but it'll, I guess, cross over into the three main X-books, Uncanny X-Men, All New X-Men, and Extraordinary X-Men.
And hopefully Secret Wars will be ended by that time.
There you go. Marvel announces the Haunted Mansion comic by Joshua Williamson and George Colejo. It's going to be a limited series coming out in March. First DC Superhero Girls graphic novel was announced. And that's based off of the sort of short animated series that runs on YouTube. Margaret Atwood's making a comic about a catbird man.
Okay.
Coming from Dark Horse Comics.
Cats!
Margaret Atwood's a novelist. Comic-Con is headed to Tokyo, courtesy of Steve Wozniak.
Wow. December 2016.
First time the convention will ever be held in Japan.
Wow.
So this time next year.
That's what I was going to say is that's kind of a strange kind of in between time for cons. You know, we'll talk about the con schedule that kind of falls around the holidays. You know, putting that in December is it's kind of an odd time to catch some of the professionals. So
yeah, and usually, like, New York is usually kind of dictates the last big one, mm-hmm. right? Outside of a couple of here and there, so that's weird right. for that reason. But it's wise, so I guess, you know.
Exactly.
He has his reasons.
The Ninth Doctor is getting his own ongoing comic series from Titan Comics.
For you Doctor Who fans out there.
Yeah. If you like Destro, that's the one.
Oh, no.
It's not there's like 20 Doctor Who books or series out. And when I say series, I mean like TV shows. Dark Horse is also going to publish a Secret Loves of Geek Girls book. And it's an anthology series.
Cool.
Bitch Planet returns with standalone issue in January. 12 Days of Free Comic Books returns to Comixology, which reminds me I need to go get today's book.
Yeah, what is today's book? I was just wondering about that.
Yesterday was Secret Wars, which started off the 12 Days, I believe.
And today, oh, it's Archie number one.
Our favorite.
I already bought that off of Comixology. Oh, well. It's like, do you want to read it? No.
Oh, my, hey, a free comic. It's a free copy. Oh, it's Archie number one.
What I was saying, I already bought off Comixology, so I can't. It just gives me the option to read it instead of put it in my cart. For shame. I see Unfollow number one and two get a special collected edition from DC's Vertigo, which reminds me I need to read issue two. I like that series.
Is it good?
I like the first issue. You know, I like social media too, so. Kind of taking that and spinning it into like a, you know, thrilling comic book series sounds interesting enough.
Works better than wrestling. Oh.
Wait. Oh, no.
Yeah, we never got your ringside thoughts last week.
I was hoping he was going to go there.
PCN Dirt.
It's a comic.
Yeah. What's that? Was it the wrestling?
Ringing endorsement.
I was saying that. Didn't we say another book that wrestling better or something?
Yeah, it was the Guardians of Infinite. The
oh yeah,
the second story.
There's a book that came out a year or so ago called Swerved. That's a graphic novel. It's set in the world of wrestling in the 70s, and it is fantastic. And that is by far, like, if any book is gonna be the top book, it's gonna have to unseat that one.
It's gotta be the book.
Exactly. But the problem with Swerved is that it's. The guys are wrestlers, and they seem authentic as far as being wrestlers, but they could just as easily be actors or football players or MMA fighters. Like, the wrestling is just there, but it's not really a major plot point or a focus of the book. They spend most of their time, sitting at a Waffle House eating dinner, talking about their life, and dealing with problems in their life from years ago. The wrestling is really not anything to do with the actual story.
Right.
Yeah, so... So it was really disappointing as far as that goes, because it could just as easily been anything else.
And what is this? Take a sneak peek at Avengers Standoff upcoming covers. Oh, and I guess it's not in here, but Marvel confirmed that Civil War 2, the comic event, will be taking place in the spring sometime, 2016.
No, I didn't get that.
No problem. That's about all we know about it. Oh, it's from, and the creative team will be the current Invincible Iron Man creative team of Brian Michael Bendis and Dave Marquez.
Wait, so are you saying is it going to be Secret Wars 2 as an also, or Secret Wars...
Secret Wars 2 is the event.
No, Civil War 2.
Oh, what am I saying? Civil
Secret
War
2. Secret Wars. Yeah.
I was about to say, we're like,
too many
wait.
Wars, damn it. Apocalypse War, Star Wars, Secret Wars, Civil War. What am I forgetting? I'm sure I'm forgetting one.
I don't know. Is there a good
Infinity
old
War?
Yeah, Infinity Wars. Yeah, Infinity Wars parts 1 and 2. I'm sure there'll be a Batman, Superman, Justice League Wars.
Oh, no.
Look forward to that and more info. We'll fill you in once we know more.
Wait, say something, Dirk.
Dirt is...
This is the book Swerve from Arcana, and this is the one that you got to... Everybody should read this one. Like, this was a fantastic book. I think it might be available now on Comixology, now that I think about it.
Hmm. That last line is some praise.
Is it on Comixology? Yep, it sure is. It's only $5.99 to buy it on Comixology.
Hmm. There you go.
Or you can buy the individual... You get the first issue free, and then the other issues are 99 cents, or you can buy the whole collection for $5.99. So there you go. Instead of getting Archie number one for free, go get a copy of Swerve number one. It's free on Comixology, and it's worth it.
It may be in the 12 days of free comics.
Hey, all the better.
Anything in the variant corner you want to touch upon?
Yeah, there was. So Mondo has a bunch of posters. Has a bunch of posters for an exhibit that's going to happen. So if you are going to be in Austin, Texas on December 11th through the 19th, the Mondo Gallery is putting on a an exhibit. Sorry, I'm trying to. And they put out some posters of what's going to be shown. Let me just drop this here real quick. Yep, thank you. Stupid ad. So this is the kind of stuff that's going to be shown. Actually, let me zip this out a little bit. So they got some Phoenix one. They got this Thanos one. See if the rest of this shows up, and I can't get this window to come out. There we go.
I mean, we can see the images, I guess.
Oh, it's not pop because there's another pop-up that's going on. That's why. So, but yeah, like there's a couple some stuff. There's some pretty nice looking stuff. There's this nice Wolverine. Actually, let me see if I can get that one to show because that was kind of cool. There's this Wolverine one with a Sabretooth on it. That looks pretty cool. It's kind of going through Logan's life in a sense. And like, if you see that down on the page, which I just took it off. Either way, some good stuff. The link is in the show notes.
Gotta check it out.
It's actually some news. I have some news dropped today about the reappearance of a Parker Brothers, now Hasbro property that was once adapted into a Marvel comic, and now it's being renewed. The story is being renewed and retold and reimagined at IDW, and the first issue is going to premiere on Free Comic Book Day 2016. Speaking of ROM Space Knight, so that news just dropped today?
Yes, this afternoon.
So that's that's pretty cool. As a fan of the character, I am at least somewhat excited. I'm glad to see the character back out. Being introduced to a new generation of fans. I am absolutely heartbroken that it's not going to be a part of the Marvel Universe, where ROM had a 75-issue run and was integrated into the Marvel Universe. I wanted to mention that I was at WinterCon this past weekend, and while I was at WinterCon, I did pick up I basically pillaged and raided one vendor's box of ROM Space Knight, picked up a good 20 some odd issues that I'm showing here on the camera for the YouTube watchers. I picked up a nice big chunk of ROM issues to fill in my collection. Very quickly on WinterCon, it was a nice show. It was very cosplay oriented. So when I have my write up, hopefully within the next week or two, as part of the fourth in a series of journal entries on the cons that I visited this year, I'll talk about some of the things that I saw at this very, very cosplay centric show. It's really the first show I've ever been to that had a very minimal emphasis on comic art, period. I know cons are moving in that direction, and that's probably going to be part of, whatever small editorial section that I might include in the write-up of the con, but, be on the lookout for that. I know I've been promising it for a while, but now it's actually coming together as, like, a nice four-part article on the cons I visited this year.
All right, and let's see. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
Time to review some books.
Aw, do we have to?
Ha!
Yes. Who wants to go first? Well, we decide. I'm going to try to decide.
Yeah, let's not all answer at once.
Secret Wars number 8.
Sure, get to it.
Nice.
Nice big bombastic issue.
Absolutely. And let me put this out there up front. This is a clear candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Yep.
It finally feels like we're getting somewhere. You know what I mean?
I dig that. I dig that totally.
Yeah. Like, this book, this issue started out really big. We see, pretty much being come along, just wrecking shop left and right. The problem that I started to have, well, I guess it wasn't so much a problem, because I guess something was going to end up happening, is got to a certain point, and then he was like,
I can't do this anymore.
Bloop. And then that was it for him. But the issue as a whole was pretty good.
I know Hitman had so much comedic chops in him. He had some funny moments here.
Yeah, he's actually kind of, if you've seen him on a panel or something, he's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, I don't know if I've actually seen him on a panel anywhere. He doesn't get out much.
Yeah.
But let's see, there was a scene of Terax getting stepped on by Galactus. Franklin Richards.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
With the lettering of Squish.
Oh, yeah, and that was right before where Ben came in, and everybody was like, the Maestro of Ships coming down, and Sinner just like, yeah, but I can't, and then spooch. So that was a lot of that kind of stuff going on in the issue.
Yeah, we had Peter Quill versus the Black Swan. Mm-hmm. He called for some backup. Nice little
Major.
There. We saw what appeared to be the death of Ben Grimm, but we know he's in the all-new, all-different Marvel, so that doesn't stick, obviously. Thanos versus Doom.
Yeah, that went
encounter.
Well.
Yeah, quick encounter. And
yeah, you know, it's always fun to see Thanos kind of put in his place.
Yeah.
And reunions between Sue Storm and 616 Reed Richards and Valeria.
I was going to say two Reed Richards, realistically. But
right. You're absolutely right on that.
And then final page.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
It was basically like Doom, we wouldn't have words with the type of moment.
Yes. Yes. I love the reference, Roddy. That's a great one.
Where's that from?
It's an Avengers issue, actually.
Yeah, usually it's been used and brought up a couple of different times.
Yeah, from the Busiek George Perez run. During whatchamacallit, from the big Ultron story that they did in that Avengers run.
But we all enjoyed the issue, I take it, right?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
And technically, you know, it's what I think they said in the CBR interview that it's definitely, you know, the issue's done. It should come out, I think, mid-January.
They said the 6th, I think.
Or they get pushed to 20, or is it 13th? Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, it's coming out in January, so that's just almost a little over a month away, so it just got delayed another week, so no big deal. If you wait this long, you can wait another month and a week.
Well, let's go back and consider 8 shit was originally the end of the series until they added that next extra book.
They had too much cool stuff they wanted to include, so they had to keep increasing the number of pages, and then they split issue 8 into 2 books.
Mm-hmm.
But hey,
you know, and since we're already back, I mean, already pushed back already, what's another month, like you said?
Right.
So, good times.
Do we want to do Marvel while we're on Secret Wars?
Sure. Let's do Guardians number 3, because that was actually a really good book.
Okay.
Guardians of Galaxy number 3, we have the decimated team kind of recollecting themselves. Kitty's kind of sort of taking charge, you know, in a sense, getting everybody to safety, but then kind of just, you know, making command decisions that didn't quite sit well with Rocket I guess he didn't say that. It was like, yeah, sure, your lead, just do whatever.
Right.
I continue to like Ben in this book. I don't know what he really didn't have much going on in this book. He just kind of came in, said a little thing, and the rest of the book just kept going.
Well, here's the thing, very quickly. You know, we've seen from how Hickman has developed his long-form story that the focus of his storytelling, his writing, was on Reed and Doom. And the peripheral characters maybe suffered a little bit from that. You know, there's definitely Reed and Doom with a little bit of Sue Storm and Ben Grimm kind of sprinkled in. But ultimately, in this issue, in this series, what we have, and I said it last week, is that Ben Grimm has kind of been reinvigorated here, because the writers, you know, kind of brought him back to his roots of being, you know, an astronaut, being in space, kind of being an adventurer as opposed to being another cog in the Fantastic Four. So it's pretty refreshing to hear him, you know, kind of use the voice that, you know, that we're so fond of and used to.
Hmm. Although, why is Venom still here?
That's a very excellent question. Excellent question.
Because he has an alien symbiote.
Right, and he's in space.
Right, but he's not doing anything.
Well, they need him to be in
he's
space.
He's the Avengers liaison. He took
Captain
Marvel.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
That's the reasoning, quote-unquote.
For what that's worth at this point.
Lame.
And he's got a new book. Which is okay to me. I read that.
You read it?
Yeah, I read it over the Thanksgiving break.
It's one of those unfortunate things.
I like Robbie Thompson. He's a good writer. Now, whether or not how long it lasts remains to be seen, but...
Right.
Oh, that's right. The Venom Space Knight.
Space Knight. Yes. Yeah, I try not to talk about that.
That's funny. I was just thinking about Venom. I was like, Venom has had a lot of solo books, you know, at least different volumes.
Well, he's one of those characters that he's the anti-hero, so they want to make him cool, but it just never catches on like they think it's going to.
Right.
Great. This cover is misleading, by the way, but that's a small point.
That's a Marvel comic for you.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
Okay.
All right. Oh, yeah, and I see that crappy villain from Secret Wars.
Yeah.
Here. Oh, yeah, Yotat, your favorite
Yotat!
Character.
Yotat!
Cousin of Tater.
That's a good one. That's funny.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of see what y'all were talking about with that, because I didn't read wherever he came in at. Yeah, I don't get why that character's around.
And he's got a
posse.
No, he's got a trying to take revenge on Drax or something stupid. It's just insane.
Was that from his appearance in Secret Wars, in that Secret Wars series?
I think it's just prior to also.
He was a brand new character for Secret Wars.
Oh, was he? I thought didn't they introduce him right before Secret Wars?
Nope.
No, I might be mistaking him for another character. My bad.
So wait, that wasn't like a Black Vortex thing or whatever?
Nope.
I wasn't 100% sure.
He, before Secret Wars, they went to the Planet of Symbiotes, I believe. That was it.
Okay.
Yeah, but he wasn't in that.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's what the final story before Secret Wars was in the last volume. All right, let's see. How was Scarlet Witch number one?
I know people on this panel kind of didn't like it. I enjoyed it, kinda.
I was okay with it.
Kinda.
You know what it is? I understand why Tim wouldn't like it, because it does delve heavily in magic.
Right.
You know, it's not as fun as Doctor Strange is. Not even in the least. By the way, out the hip hop cover for this week. The lone hip hop cover for this week is an homage to an Eminem album cover. It is The Scarlet Witch. Roddy got that too. It's by Bill Sienkiewicz. What I don't like about the book is the premise of her solo adventuring. You know, they have to establish that. But
that's
ultimately
the part I kind of like about it, though. But
well,
go
that's
ahead.
Good. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they got to hook somebody on it. But, you know, ultimately, that's the point. They have to hook somebody on that.
There's a sucker born every minute. You know?
Listen, that's how they sell the book. Someone buys into the premise, and they're willing to follow it through. So, you know, in my case, I don't necessarily find the premise that intriguing that I want to read more. I thought it was a nice kind of one and done story for me. I was happy to see, you know, a Scarlet Witch that was a little bit more sure of herself than she has been in a lot of her recent appearances. Mm-hmm. You know, outside of, you know, maybe the really, really recent, like all new, all different appearances. I think, you know, especially post, whatchamacallit, House of M, she's been a very difficult character to get, you know, to get a handle on, a grasp on, and it's kind of nice to see her, you know, be self-assured, and even if she's not really self-assured, she's putting on a good front. And, you know, it's a good place for the character and for any new readers to jump on.
Right. So here's what I'm kind of liking about it. Like, one, I appreciate Robinson's art because writing. You know, Invaders kind of had some of the same notes about it. And this is probably going to need a minute or two to kind of, This book's probably going to need a minute to kind of catch on, but and I hope it gets it. And two, well, we don't see – any other times we have seen Wanda on the solo book, it's always been with Vision, so them as a couple in this. So I'm kind of curious as to what happened with – to see what she does on her own. And three – the way the premise kind of sounds, like, I don't know, this, like you said, it sounds like a one and done, but I kind of hope they dive into more of this, because the premise of this particular story was her going to a scene of a crime with this detective, trying to kind of doping out what was going on with it, and it was based, since it was magic-based, you know, this was right up her alley, and ultimately dealing with what was going on at the time. And also coming into a bigger problem, or a bigger issue, actually, is going to be the tie to the first run. I'm kind of hoping that the part with the police kind of sticks around, because that kind of puts me in mind of this book, well, this show and a series of books called The Dresden Files, where this magician named Harry Dresden kind of helps the police as a, you know, as a...
He's a consultant,
pretty
yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. So it kind of gives me vibes of that, and I don't know if that was intentional or not, but if it goes along that lines, I wouldn't mind see how this goes, and that's why I'm intrigued by this book. And the Harkness part, I'm guessing they were taking cues from the Uncanny Avengers annual? I don't know, because I didn't read it.
The annual?
Ghost show,
the Uncanny Avengers annual ended and said, you know, follow their adventures in
Scarlet. Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, because we see Agatha Harkness Ghost, a younger version of her, as we have against what we've seen in the past, and
right.
A slightly different sounding Agatha at that. But yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
Oh, the art. I mean, there was something like, okay. I was kind of back and forth on the art about this, because it kind of works for this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clean enough to work for it. But I don't know. Going forward, I'm not sure if I could if it's going to clean up a little bit more, I guess. I don't know. Like, it was all kind of sketchy looking, and that's not saying that's a bad thing, because it worked, but, I don't know.
Right, there's definitely, this is definitely an idiosyncratic style. This is a stylized look. This is not traditional comic book at all, but the layouts are fairly straightforward. You know, it's not like it's hard to comprehend what's going on.
Exactly.
Unlike some other, I forget the artist's name, but the artist that was doing Winter Soldier, you know, that was pretty tough. The most recent run, the whatchamacallit,
yeah. That was tough to read.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. All right, how about did anyone else read Ultimates number 2?
Yes,
let's skim through it.
Right, I know I put that out on Twitter, so I think Tim, you ended up reading it after I mentioned it.
Yeah, I was going to get to it anyway. It's just a question if it was going to be before the show or not.
Gotcha.
But I liked it. I learned a lot about Galactus, just because growing up I never read many Avengers or
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, well, you always pretty much anytime Galactus shows up, you kind of always got a part of his origin, or at least the same parts of his origin.
So yeah, I didn't realize he was like a regular person that I guess got a bunch of powers and got turned into a huge being.
Well, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything by saying this, but you know what we've always known about Galactus, or at least what's been developed, is that he is the survivor of a previous universe. And we get now that we've kind of lived through, you know, vicariously through the Marvel characters, the end of a universe and the beginning of an all new, all different universe. It's sort of, you know, now we can sort of see what happened to Galan when his universe ended. And he ended up becoming Galactus, and that's actually part of the story, and that's, you know, one of the driving forces of the story is how this character ends up becoming Galactus. I love the way that Al Ewing is telling the story, but this book would be nothing without Kenneth Rocafort doing such great work and, like, you know, littering every page with detail and nuance that you know, it's just a wonder to behold.
Yeah.
But the story that Ewing is telling, I think, is just great. You know, he's giving a lot of kind of hero shots to T'Challa. He is the leader of this group of Avengers / Ultimates. You know, there's a couple of great, you know, he basically stands up to Galactus and all the posturing. You know, just as a quick refresher, the first issue of Ultimates ended with Captain Marvel and Blue Marvel telling Galactus that they had to talk to him about some sort of deal that they could work out with him, or you know, an answer to his ongoing problems. And now we find out in this issue what that is. And it is something that the entire team of Ultimates has to work together to achieve. And it's a, you know, it's a pretty cool like two story arc so far, where we start with the establishment of, you know, the team dynamic, and then we see them all in action in this issue. I really enjoyed this. This is another candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Yeah. Look, so let me ask you guys something. I don't know if you noticed or not. I agree with everything you say, because it is a particular click. I've enjoyed it. ISO 8 has been a long-running thing in the game.
Video game.
In the Marvel games. Has that been anywhere in the comics before they threw this in here?
Not until Contest of Champions. Not until recently, right. I don't believe. I could be wrong.
What's
Google
that?
Will help us with that.
ISO 8 shows up in the book as a, well.
It's been running throughout England's books, I think, lately. I think even pre-Secret Wars. Because it's something he started in Mighty Avengers.
I think you're right. He may have been touching on it right before Secret Wars.
It's something that
Blue Marvel has been
tinkering with or trying to find. And the only reason I know that is because I read some long article that was tying all the pieces together. Actually, it was on Bleeding Cool now that I think about it.
Right.
They had screenshots, and I think Blue Marvel might have been looking for it to, because it could help him rescue his son from whatever dimension he was in or something.
Okay, now I remember.
Oh, okay. So, I do remember that part, but because I think they even attempted to do that at one point. It didn't quite work out. But
in
last issue, having just reread it, I know that got brought back up, sort of, or at least with him with it. But I know, like I said, it was a long-running thing in the video games, and I couldn't remember whether it was a comic thing or they just plopped that stuff from the games into this.
Or maybe he took it from the game and knew that he'd be working on. He's planning something, you can tell.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we liked Ultimates.
I did.
Uncanny Avengers number 3, another team book. This formally introduced Cable to the lineup as they're taking on the inhuman villain, the Shredded Man, in Boston, trying to prevent another horrific future from becoming. We found out a little bit more about Synapse, or how do you say her name?
The Synapse. Inhuman,
Synapse, the inhuman member of the Avengers team, and her connection to the Shredded Man, and the Avengers trying to work together with Cable, because, you know, he's used to leading Rogues, the field leader. Then you got Deadpool and Cable's relationship. Lots going on.
Yep. Interesting. Lots going on. You know what's funny, real quick? I was about to say real quick, it's interesting to see how magic has been sprinkled around the Marvel Universe in all new, all different. You know, we were talking about Scarlet Witch earlier, and we have Brother Voodoo, or Dr. Voodoo, on this team, you know, doing magic-y type things at the very beginning of the issue. You know, and all three of those characters, I believe, or at least, you know, Scarlet Witch and Dr. Voodoo both appear in the next issue of Doctor Strange, or have appeared in issues of Doctor Strange. So it's interesting to see how magic has reappeared and come sort of to the forefront of the Marvel Universe in all new, all different.
How was the Star Wars annual?
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a good issue. I liked it. You know, it was interesting to kind of follow. It's kind of a similar take on it's similar to the Vader Down stuff, in the sense that spoiler alert, it's about trying to take out a high level bad guy and trying to capitalize on an opportune, you know, or supposedly opportune moment, and then it all sort of goes to hell because either they can't capitalize or it's actually a setup. So you know, it's actually pretty cool. It involves a character that I don't know has been introduced in any of the movies, maybe a character specifically introduced for the story. I don't know if he's part of the extended universe or not.
As my understanding is that the entire expanded universe from before was completely wiped out, and this is Marvel's first push into building their own expanded
universe. Okay, so they're not even using any of like the same names.
Nope.
I think the only thing that's kind of still canon is like Clone Wars and Up.
Okay.
And
that's from the movies or TV shows.
Yeah, the Cartoon Network show is still considered canon, but right, anything,
the old Dark Horse comics or the other Marvel comics, all of those.
All of the other novels and all the old novels and stuff. They might be taking bits and pieces, though. Mm-hmm. But.
Okay. So then, you know, in that case, this is a brand new character, and a brand new story being told about, what the rebels are able to accomplish, in secret on Coruscant during or right after A New Hope. Okay. I don't want to spoil too much while what happens.
Obviously.
Yeah, it's basically an action comic. I mean, if you were to make like a action movie, spies and gunfights and trying to sneak into some place and assassinate somebody and, all that kind of stuff is what's happening in here. So it's a good, it's not your standard what you expect from a Star Wars type of story.
Right.
It's not only, expanding by giving you a new character and showing you new areas of the Star Wars universe, but it's also telling a different type of story than what you normally get from Star Wars.
Cool.
So I really enjoyed it, even though, it really has no connection to anything else that's happened in the comics, anything that's going in the ongoing Star Wars or Darth Vader, any of the minis. This is something completely divorced from everything else, but it was still very interesting and a lot of fun.
I was about to ask, does it still present itself as a good in-universe Star Wars story?
I mean, it expands on the Emperor a little bit. I mean, that's even though you're focused on this rebel spy, I mean, technically what you're getting is an Emperor story. Mm-hmm. And you get to see the Emperor is much more than just, you think of him as being this guy who sits in the chair and just kind of growls at people. You get to see that he still is a very sharp-minded guy plotting several steps ahead of everyone else, still doing a lot of things proactively, fighting against the rebels instead of just some guy who's out of touch off somewhere, thinking that he's got it all under control and not doing anything about it.
Sure.
All right.
Cool. Let's see. Sticking to Marvel. Let's see what else you guys read.
Did anybody read Spider-Man 2099?
No, but I'm reading so much stuff about it that I'm curious to maybe try this now.
I'm actually reading this because my son wants to read it, so I'm reading it too, just to make sure everything's okay. And one, they fixed the lettering problem everybody's been complaining about
because
they've been doing the red letters on the blue backgrounds. That's nearly impossible to read. So now they've changed it to the red on white to match his new outfit. So it's a lot easier to read. Makes more sense that way. But the story is actually expanding on the mythos of 2099, and it's explaining some of the things that have been a little confusing up to this point. You got a little bit of an explanation of who this random crazy person was that was hanging around him and what her connection is with what's-his-face? Fireman 2099, I can't think of his real name at the moment.
Miguel O'Hara.
There you go. One of the things he's been doing is opening a portal to the future, trying to fix some problem in our current time so that when he opens the portal to 2099, it'll look fixed. It'll be different because right now it's like a wasteland. Something happens in our time that screws up the future. So he's trying to fix it and he can't figure out what it is. And by opening this portal, he doesn't actually do it, but someone else opens the portal and lets one of the bad guys from the future into the present. Mm-hmm. So the 2099 cast of characters is actually growing a little bit more here in the current timeline. And just, I like time travel stories and out-of-time characters and stuff anyway, and it's fun to see these different characters make these connections with each other as, all people who are displaced in time kind of are somehow drawn to each other, and it's just, the artwork is pretty good, the story is really good, so overall, I enjoy this a lot, and everyone else is asleep.
No.
We're here.
No, it's just, I haven't had a chance to really catch up on the last two issues. I think I read one and two and then lost track of three, so I'm going to have to kind of backtrack a little bit to see where we are now.
Well, three got a little silly, and four kind of re-centers things a little bit. And like I said, it explains some things that have been a little weird
I kind of want to see some of the previous issues to see this lettering issue.
Yeah, if you try to read the digital copies that we were given, it's really tough. It's a lot easier to read in print.
So if the background was blue and the lettering was red?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was not good. But
it wasn't like that pre-Secret Wars, was it? Because I actually read a couple of those issues.
I don't know. I never read it before. Well, I mean, I read 2099 back when it came out in like 93 or whatever. But
must have been something new they tried, because I'm pretty sure I read a couple of the pre-Secret Wars, and I never noticed, so...
Yeah.
Okay. How was Black Knight? One of you read that, right? I saw it. Dirt read it.
I read it too.
Okay.
All right. Well, first of all, the Uncanny Avengers are a bunch of punks. I mean, that's really what it comes
down to. Because they can't take that. Because they can't take out the Black Knight, or because they're even messing with them to begin with.
A little bit of both. We find out that there was a an instance.
Incident.
An incident that happened previously before in that 8 month unmarked time period between the end of Secret Wars and the all new, all different Marvel Universe, and that incident actually separated him from the Avengers and put them at odds. And his time in Weird World has actually been building power, waiting for them to come get him. And in this issue, they come for him, and he's ready. And he takes them head on. And he actually does a pretty good job of keeping them at bay and taking a couple of them out. It's one of those things where, well, his sword is powered. It has some sort of, you know, mystical, magical energy.
Well, it's been enchanted.
And so the sword has somehow been gaining power and getting more powerful and exerting more control over him. So he is becoming less him and more of whatever this mystical energy of the sword is. And so the Avengers are afraid that he's going to lose himself to this whatever
dark energy. And go to the dark side.
But, so, you know, I look at him the same way I saw, like, Namor in the storyline leading up to Secret Wars, where it's like, yeah, okay, so, I mean, he did that, guy deserved it, move on, you know? I don't have a problem with it. He's a good force of vengeance, so we'll see what happens. But, I mean, it's interesting. I like the idea that the first issue they gave you this character, and you just kind of knew that he was, you know, powerful and he could be deadly and whatever, and then the second issue they almost flip it around to make him an anti-hero instead of the hero that it looks like he is in the first issue. So I think it's an interesting storytelling device that they used, and it, you know, I didn't expect to read this book. This is one of those things where the first issue came in and I just kind of flipped through it and I was like, oh, I'll give it a chance, but I'm not really familiar with the character, never really got into him or anything like that, but I mean, these two issues have been really good. I'm enjoying it.
All right. I don't know if you recall, I don't know if you were on the show when I talked about talking to Frank Thierry at New Jersey Comic Expo, and he told, you know, I talked to him about writing Black Knight and how I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of the first issue, not so much for, you know, the direction the story went, but for the fact that it was set in Weird World. And I didn't understand why, of all places, they would put the Black Knight in Weird World when there's already a Weird World comic, right? I mean, yes, you could set multiple comics in a place called Weird World because, you know, come on, why wouldn't you, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, what, you know, my biggest misgiving was that, you know, they stuck him here and we're trying to figure out why, of all places, would they put Black Knight here when he's always been, you know, one of the more, you know, he's kind of like an anachronism. He's like a tech-savvy knight, you know, who carries a sword and rides around on a horse with wings, right?
Has some issues.
Exactly. So, you know, when we get to this issue, we finally see what happened that kind of set him off. It's funny that they used a little bit of a cannon fodder character that was introduced, we were referencing before the Busiek and Perez Avengers run. These exemplars were introduced right around that time, you know, and later in the run as related to the Juggernaut, and you know, they basically used one of the exemplars as cannon fodder, you know, to as part of the incident that kind of sets this story in motion of the Black Knight kind of losing himself to the will of the Ebony Blade. So, you know, I like where the story's going. It was kind of cool to see the Uncanny Avengers kind of put in their place, you know, but this also, you know, we also remember now when we look at this Unity Squad, it's not exactly the most powerful Avenger squad out there, you know? So, you know, it's not like they're sending in, like, all of the heavy hitters on this team to go after the Black Knight. So, you know, to see them kind of fighting to a stalemate isn't that surprising.
I was just thinking, I was like, is there really an Avengers heavy hitters team anymore?
It's probably going to be all new, all different.
Ultimates?
Well, yeah, Ultimates, I guess, is the heaviest.
Yeah, I guess they're considered an Avengers team, quote-unquote.
Mm. Question. So, historically, the Ebony Blade takes over when he cuts somebody, draws blood from somebody. Did this happen? Is that why he's being taken over? Or did they find some other reason why?
Well, they Dane Whitman had been feeling the blade getting stronger. Like, literally, they say he's been feeling it.
Right.
So...
Which, yeah, that's kind of been the case, but usually when that happens, I mean, as you probably know, usually
right. Something it comes when he's cutting people, right?
Exactly, and then so either he turns to stone or something ends up having
to use. Exactly, or like he's like enveloped in metal or something like that.
Right.
Whatchamacallit? Yeah, I mean, there was a time in the mid-90s, like the early 90s, where the Black Knight was basically not cutting anyone. He was hitting the people with the flat of the blade.
Right.
So that he wouldn't further... Yeah, he wouldn't further the curse of the Ebony Blade, right? Mm. But in this, he's definitely drawing blood. He's drawing super soldier blood in this. No, you know, a mild spoilers.
Hmm. Old man Roger still mixing it up, huh?
Yep. No idea how he's doing it, to be perfectly honest. So, it's an interesting read. Like I said, Thierry sold me on this. He said, look, you know what? Read it. You'll see what the motivation of the Black Knight is. You kind of have to get past the weird setting because Marvel, I know I said this on the show, Marvel is looking to push Weird World. So they use that as a setting for this character.
I think there's one of my favorite moments, though, is this moment where Sam and Steve are walking up to the Black Knight and... this is in one of the flashbacks. And, he looks at Steve and he's like, "Ah, you'll always be the Cap to me. I can't see calling you anything else." And Sam is like shrugging behind him, like, "Hey, I'm standing right here. Like, I'm the new Captain America. Guys, come on." He's like, "No. This is the Captain America." I thought that was a funny little exchange.
They're gonna milk that joke for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, maybe because I didn't expect anything out of it, you know, because I wasn't familiar with the character or anything. I just read it because it happened to be sitting there and actually found myself enjoying it.
Cool.
Happy accidents.
Exactly.
Let's see. I think at least anybody, two more issues.
Anybody read Hawkeye?
No.
Oh, did they come out?
I didn't get to it. That and Spider-Gwen, I was trying to get to it. I didn't get to.
Yeah, I did get Spider-Gwen, but I hadn't read Hawkeye yet.
I just don't know what to make of this Hawkeye book because it's...
Is it the time jump stuff?
Yeah, it's really selling itself on showing them 30 years in the future. And I just can't believe, you know, anytime they do some sort of story where they jump in the future like that, it never sticks. Like, it never makes any difference. It never works out. And I just don't know... I don't see in a book like this where nobody's overpowered, nobody is... playing with cosmic cubes, there's no Beyonders, you know, whatever. I just don't see how telling a story 30 years in the future is ever going to play backwards to have weight on what's going on today. And to me, that's the biggest downfall of the book. If this was a, you know, standalone movie made in the, you know, late 90s when nothing was connected to anything else and they could, you know, just randomly take the characters and tell the story they want to tell, then I'd buy it. You know, I could get into the story, but I'm just having a hard time getting into the story because you just know that nothing that they're telling in the 30 years from now is going to have any weight or is ever going to stick. Mm. I just don't see any way that it plays out, that it means anything. And that's my biggest problem with the story.
Understood.
I mean, the story is pretty good for what it is, mm-hmm. but I just don't see how this carries any weight or plays out in the present time.
Yeah, well, maybe we need to keep reading to see how it does.
I mean, it's Lemire. I mean, he does weird stuff, so mm-hmm. you never know. There might be some sort of psychic link made to the past version of themselves in order to give them, you know, a message from the future so they can change it. I don't know, but...
I like Lemire.
Yeah, I mean, he's done some good stuff over the years, but the one thing, though, the artwork is really good. Perez, the modern artwork, you know, looks like the last series, so you do have that continuity of style, but all the stuff in the future is done in pencil drawing, and it's still colored and everything, but it's colored in lighter tones, almost, I don't want to say it's pastels, but right. It is lighter toned colors, but you can see the actual pencil work of the drawing. So it has this completely different look to it as opposed to the thick, dark lines that we get in the modern time. And a lot of times I just find myself looking at, because you can see the pencil work so clearly, mm-hmm. and he's not doing shading, he's not doing, blending using the pencil. I mean, it's all line work that's direct pencil, and it's because you can see each and every pencil stroke. It's not buried underneath, you know, a lot of needless colors and, you know, computer rendered stuff. I find myself just staring at a lot of the panels, just panel to panel, looking at the line work and looking, you know, at how well things are shaped and you know, the lines mean something in the artwork. It's beautiful to look at. Like I said, though, I'm just not 100% sold on the story.
Gotcha. That's probably why I stopped reading. I don't think I've read the last two, most of the last issue. So this is what, two?
Yeah, this is just
two. Oh, okay. Two. So I barely remember the first issue. Like, I don't know if I made it all the way through.
One thing is, like, I know he's telling one big long story, but it's like, okay, geez, this story with these kids still going on?
Right.
Just because it's been, like, over six months now, probably. Just because of the delays with Secret Wars and then the previous volume starting again. But,
yeah. Well, that's frustrating. They did that thing where they printed a couple issues out of order, mm-hmm. Just because they had somebody to do like a fill-in or fill-in two issues, so they did the fill-in issues, and then later on the actual issues came along. It's been a pretty messed up run on getting the Hawkeye books out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tim, there's a couple of old young Avengers in here for you, if that's a draw.
Oh, I'm going to read it, so. Old Young Avengers. Let's see, Amazing Spider-Man number 4, anyone read?
Yes.
People like their Spider-Man?
Yes, yes, yes. It's I know that that Dirt has a preference for the Spidey series over Slott's current characterization of Peter Parker, kind of a more mature Peter Parker. This issue has Peter acting the way we expect him to, but at the same time, I would have thought that he might have figured out better ways to do what he's sort of expected to do without spoiling too much. He basically, the premise of the story is that Spider-Man is working very closely with S.H.I.E.L.D. and they're trying to take down a reinvigorated Zodiac, and you know, and they're on the edge of a big mission to try to take down Zodiac, and Spider-Man's basically called away by an emergency, and the emergency involves Aunt May, and it's just very weird that, you know, for a hero that is so kind of mature and has already kind of gone through so many of the paces and you know, developed so many kind of contingencies, especially this new technologically advanced Peter Parker, you'd think there would be more ways to either be in more place in different places all at once, or to maybe, you know, dispatch, you know, somebody to go help Aunt May. I know he wants to do it himself. He's got his whole you know, responsibility shtick going, but it just seemed like you know, like, come on, Pete, we haven't figured out a better way to do this yet. You know, that was just a little bit of frustration on my part. And the attack that draws him away is the reappearance of a certain villain who has been teased as having returned, and you know, we get a lot of cool little bits here about you know, during the battle that the Spider-Man enters in rescuing Aunt May. But ultimately, what we have is, you know, just another chapter in the story that involves, you know, like a much greater scheme and multiple villains going on at the same time. This would definitely be a very tough issue to pick up as a first issue.
I do want to say, I like the art on this. Is very nice.
It's Kamikoli, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've enjoyed. I need to go back and look and see if it's like a different inker or colorist, or if it's.
It's the colors. It's the colors. I don't. I know. I have a feeling. I know where you're getting at. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just everything kind of just like sparks off the page.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a couple times in the previous Amazing Spider-Man run, and even, you know, previous stuff over the years, where I did like his art, and then other places it didn't look as nice, his mm-hmm. Spider-Man work. But yeah, everything looks like top-notch here.
Well, he's been at it for a while. He's probably been really developing, you know, a style and maybe cleaning up
like,
you know, some maybe, you know, old habits that he's got, because obviously, just real quick before you move on, you know, he's had a hand in redesigning a lot of the stuff too.
Yeah,
you
know, I was gonna say,
probably a chance to kind of, you know, exercise the artistic muscles.
Okay, I don't know who designed the Mockingbird suit, but I know Amazing Spider-Man number 1 was the first time seeing her in the new all new all different Marvel, and I love the way he draws Mockingbird, mm-hmm. and like even just supporting characters like Nick Fury and whatever Helicarrier he was in just looks nice, and got the action sequences he's got down really well. Mm-hmm. So just a good creative team all over.
Listen, I enjoyed this. It's not a click of the week candidate because, like I said, of how I felt like Slott is characterizing this particular aspect of Peter Parker's character. But otherwise, you know, it's still an interesting story. He's got a lot of different threads going on that that are developing over time, with a couple of big bads kind of orchestrating things behind the scenes. But otherwise, listen, if you're a fan of seeing a slightly more adult version of Peter Parker kind of moving forward and developing as a hero, this is the book for you.
Yeah, I guess the disadvantage of trying to do all Marvel stuff now is, like, some of the stuff we probably would have left for clicks of, rapid fire.
Yeah, it's all right. We don't have to do all. There's still Marvel that I want to talk about. I'll save it for rapid fire. Let's move on.
You want to do DC or let's do DC. Give some love to them.
You guys read Batman, right?
Yes.
Batman 47.
I'm mad because first DC said the book wasn't coming out.
You
this
mad,
week.
Bro? You mad?
Yeah, I'm mad, bro. DC said the book wasn't coming out this week, so I was like, I don't have to read this right away. I can hold on to it, read it later in the week, get a nice review up for next Wednesday, and then they send the email out late Tuesday night, or I guess early Tuesday night for them on the West Coast. Like, it's coming out after all. Hmm. So I was like, dope.
Yeah. Real quick, before we get to the actual content of the book, Dirt, did your store get any of the polybag cover copies of this issue?
We did. We're getting all the polybag ones, and we decided that we are actually opening them, and we are inventorying them as what they actually are, if they're the pencil, if they're the ink, or if they're the full color, because we do have customers that want, like, a set.
Specific ones, right.
Yeah. Like, they want all of the full color ones, or they want one of each one, or whatever. So we've been opening them up. The problem is, about 90% of the
polybag
ones, they are damaged.
That's what I was going to mention. I'm glad that you brought that up. Because a lot of what I had heard and read was very obviously it's going to be anecdotal because it's people's experiences with these polybags. But when I saw the polybag books unopened in my my little hole in the wall comic shop, shout out to Carmine Street Comics in New York City, Greenwich Village. I did not go to Midtown this week because I didn't have to pick up all the hip-hop covers, right? So the few polybag books that I did see, I noticed that the polybags were very snug to the comic.
They are.
And I believe that probably had a hand in, this kind of screw-up in production where a lot of the books are damaged. If you remember way back to the first opaque polybag book that we all remember, unfortunately, is The Death of Superman, those polybags were fairly loose to the book. They had a lot of give. Plenty of space for the book to move around.
There's a seam down the back of the mm-hmm. bag, and when you have a stack of these bagged books all pushed together, the seam on the back of one pushes in on the front of the other one and puts a crease right down the middle of the front cover. But then it also pushes back on the one that's actually bagged, and you get a crease on the back cover. So there's a crease going down the front and a crease going down the back. But on top of that, a lot of the books also have creases on the spine.
Right.
And I wonder if because it's so tight when they're putting them in and sealing them, because there's no give, you've got a little bit of push from the machine sliding them into the bags and sealing off the ends.
Right, that's what I heard.
Are getting bent on the spine. So we had, I want to say maybe three out of all the ones we've gotten. We've gotten maybe two dozen copies altogether between the three different books that have had polybags. Mm-hmm. We've had three copies that were actually good.
Wow!
And all the rest have been damaged, and there were some of them. Like, we went ahead and we put them on the shelf, and we just told people, they've got a crease on them. If you care, mm-hmm. You can buy them. Otherwise, they're going to be damaged out and probably destroyed and replaced by Diamond, whatever. There were maybe four or five that they're okay, but they're definitely not mint or anything right. like that, which for a collector's book, a lot of people don't like. Mm-hmm. But out of all the ones we had, there were three that actually came through okay, and all the rest have had damage on the spine plus that crease right. down the middle of the front and the back.
Right. I had heard stories, around the city, people just talking about it and, kind of passing through Carmine Street Comics telling us about it. So It was pretty interesting.
I wonder, the problem is, you take a random guy, walks into a shop, buys the bag comic, leaves, goes home, mm-hmm. rips it open, and finds that it's got a crease on it. You can't really go back to the shop and say, hey, you sold me this book with a crease on it, because the guy who owns the shop is going to go, well, you bought it, you walked out the door, I have no idea right. what to do with it when you left. So I don't know how many copies out there are damaged, but no one will ever say anything because there's no way to prove that it was damaged before they left the store, you know?
Well, I was going to say, in the world of social media, the stuff will be posted at some point. But, it's funny that you mentioned it. I wonder how many people are just going to leave the bag closed, because remember, that's what people did with Death of Superman, so...
Yeah, well.
But now the contents inside the comic.
Yes, now let's move on to that.
Yes, we thought what looked like the resolution to Jim Gordon's battle with Mr. Bloom was short-lived. He was able to hold his own against the villain. We caught back up with Duke Thomas taking on Penguin's henchmen. Getting some help from Bruce Wayne, and then Duke and Bruce Wayne having a heated argument / discussion, and what seems to be Bruce Wayne starting to get some of his memories back, and then the issue ending with, I guess, the return of a character, best way to describe it,
without
spoiling anything.
Yeah, I was about to hit the bell, but that's not necessary.
Well, so there are spoilers out there for it, so be careful.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm just kind of at the point where I don't know what to make of some of the...
Have you stopped caring?
I don't know that I've stopped caring, but it's...
I'm close.
The swerves are starting to get into soap opera territory.
Yeah, I'm close to stopping. I'm very, very close at this point.
The amnesia thing was bad enough. Hmm. And then the character that appears at the end is enough where it's just like... You just kind of slap your forehead, and it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, seriously? This is where we're going with this?
Yep.
But... I mean, I guess if nothing else, it looks like we're on track for Bruce Wayne back as Batman in 3 issues. So mm-hmm. by the time 50 hits, we'll have a big Bruce Wayne return and the end of Robo-Batman.
Oh, and before the show started, there's a rumor out about DC looking for new creative talent to join the Batman book. Mm-hmm. Not sure if they're trying to just replace Snyder or look for an artist replacement while Greg Capullo is doing his image book with Mark Millar. But I'd imagine that they already have that artist already lined up, because next month is the first issue without Capullo. So it makes me wonder, is it like with Scott Snyder helping to, I guess, run this DC Writers Program thing going on, mm-hmm. if he'll maybe step back from Batman, and that's why they need someone else to take on that book. But then supposedly whenever Capullo comes back, him and Snyder have something big planned that might not have anything, might not be a Batman book, so they could tackle another character or characters. Lots to consider. Mm. But I enjoyed the book, of course.
It might be one of those things where Snyder and Capullo leave Batman and another creative team takes over, and then they return in 6 months to take over, like, Legends of the Dark Knight or Streets of Gotham.
They launch a new number one.
Yeah,
I can see that happening. Okay. The rest of the DC, for me at least, was the parts of Robin War,
mm-hmm.
which were parts 2 and 3, and then 2 tie-ins. So I'll kind of just discuss all 4 of them together.
Go for it.
Part 2 of Robin War was Grayson number 15, which I reviewed on DClickNation.com and PopCultureNetwork.com, even though I haven't sent you the link.
I was going to say.
I was going to send them to you that morning, and I was like, nah, I can do it later on, and of course forget. So let's see. This was the Robins, former and current, being Red Robin, Red Hood, Grayson, and Damian, sort of grouping up with the We Are Robin kids and training them and trying to see, who has what it takes to maybe be a Robin and work with them. So we got a lot of training sessions with each person taking on an individual member of the Robins. And, of course, there's probably 50-plus members of We Are Robin, but we only focus on the 4 that are in the main We Are Robin series. Don't ask me the other kids' names. It's 3 kids and Duke Thomas. That's about all I can tell you. But there was a cool little thread where at the end of each of the training sessions, one of the Robins says a word that Batman, associates with, being Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of like flows all the way through to the end of the issue when Grayson says it to Duke. But so yeah, Grayson and Duke are training, aka the two leaders of the groups. Jim Gordon Batman has planted like a tracer. I guess they have like a spy in the We Are Robin group, so they're like keeping tabs on them. And then as each of the Robins take their trainee out in on Gotham for a mission, they're ambushed by the Gotham PD because they're trailing them. Mm-hmm. And of course, supposedly this was all part of Dick Grayson's plan to get all the Robins or We Are Robin kids arrested and in custody because he didn't want any of them to get hurt because they haven't had proper training, which was something I was thinking about. I was like, why would they try to train all these kids who have no training when they could possibly get killed or hurt out there? And Tom King and Tim Seeley actually brought that up during its like a flashback scene between all the Robins. So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that it shows that Dick's, I guess, like this master manipulator playing all everyone behind the scenes, even his brothers, so to speak. And the reason he wanted the like Red Robin and Red Hood and Damian to get taken with them is so the kids would have someone watching their backs. So that's where Grayson number 15 ended, and then it goes over to the Comics number 47, which focuses more on Jim Gordon because it's a Batman book.
Mm-hmm. Although Gotham Academy technically came before Detective.
Yes. Yeah. And that actually, that takes place like the same time as Robin War number 1, I think. Because in Robin War number 1, it says there's like a little editor's note saying, you know, check out Gotham Academy number 13. And I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't even come out till next week, being this week. So a little out of order-ish. I guess since Dirt has Gotham Academy number 13 up, I can do that one right quick. It's a tie-in issue, so it's not necessary for the main issue, or the main story of Robin War, but one of the Robin War kids is sent to Gotham Academy because her parents are afraid that their kid will get tied up in all the Robin, you know, We Are Robin kids, because there's the Robin protocols or whatever, Robin laws are enacted in Gotham. Anyone wearing the Robin colors or have an R on their clothing is being arrested. So I think her name's Rico, is sent to Gotham Academy. She meets up with the Gotham Academy kids, follows them on their adventures as they're trying to find a zombie, and she ends up leaving because Duke's in trouble, and that's where it goes into the Robin War. Detective Comics 47, Jim Gordon issue, they show this the prison, so to speak, of where the Robin War, the We Are Robin kids are being kept. The Quarter Owls finally make their appearance, so there's that. Well, they make their appearance known to everyone, and that's about it for... Oh, guest writer Ray Fox was on this issue, and I forget who the artist was.
Not one of the regulars.
Yeah, it was like basically a fill-in issue. And Red Hood and Arsenal number 7, which I also reviewed on declicknation.com, because I'm enjoying this book overall. So it's a tie-in issue, not necessary reading, but fun nevertheless, with a great cover image. Let's see, Red Hood, Arsenal, and Joker's daughter, who joined the group last issue, are in Gotham taking care of some business, and Red Hood leaves so he can, you know, help out with the Robin War stuff, and leaves Roy to babysit the Joker's daughter. They go off on a mission themselves. They have some bonding moments, and Red Hood comes back at the end, and that's where it picks up next issue, where something's happened to the two of them. Oh, and while Red Hood's off with Red Robin, we see some nice brotherly bonding moments between the two of them, because they always seem to pair Red Robin and Red Hood together in all these event series for Batman. But Scott Lobdell, he's got the snappy, witty dialogue down in this comic. There's like a lot of funny back and forth between Joker's daughter and Arsenal and Red Hood. I'm thinking about sending DC an email, see if I can like get some interview questions from Scott Lobdell done. because I think this book needs like more promotion.
Yeah,
like
you're probably right.
Oh, and his collaborator on Dune, Javier Fernandez, follows him over, and it does. This is his first issue of art on Red Hood and Arsenal.
Okay, so I have not been reading Robin Moore. Like I read the we put the preview up for Robin Moore number one on Pop Culture Network, so I understood the premise that the cop was killed by a Robin in a, you know, trying to protect a guy, went wrong, whatever, blah, 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 fine. So I wasn't going to read the crossover, but I read Detective, I read Batman, so I went ahead and read this issue, and I was mad. I was mad that I wasted time reading this issue. This issue angered me.
Whoa.
This was really bad. Okay, so first of all,
I love it.
Bad issue to just jump in, I'll say.
Well, but it's not so much like the Robin Moore story. It was like this particular. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. This issue was a bad one just to pick. And
the Robin. Okay, so all the Robins have been arrested, right? And they're being held prisoner. Okay, sure. They're being suspended in these cells hanging from the ceiling. Like, I was waiting for a vat of bubbling hot acid to, you know, giant cauldron to come under, you know, underneath them. Like, oh, we're slowly going to lower you in, Mr. Bond. It was like the dumbest looking, quote unquote, prison.
You mean like a bird cage?
It really did.
And the room, they're in this modern, futuristic, like industrial, RoboCop-esque looking. No, not that, but like catwalks and gotcha. Iron girders and whatever, except for these giant freaking 6 foot tall owl, brown owl statues in every corner. And they're not like, it's not like the funky technology of the room has, you know, kind of that weird triangle shape of an owl head with some eyes kind of hidden in it. I mean, these are like giant totem pole owls that are stuck in every corner and nobody seems to notice. None of the cops are like, oh, well, this is weird. We have these giant owls in here. And none of the Robins are like, hey, look at those weird owl statues. Maybe it's the Court of Owls. Nobody right. seems to notice these giant things, and then when the Court of Owls shows up, they're like, oh my gosh, the Court of Owls is real? It's like, well, yeah, you've been standing next to five of these 6 foot tall statues for the entire issue, and you never noticed? Like, what, you know, okay. So anyway, I'm reading through this issue, and the first thing that I notice about all these people in the cages is they still have all their gimmicks. Everybody still has their mask, their
yes, helmet, I'm glad
their,
you,
tape, their,
oh, their utility belts.
Yeah.
I jotted this down in my notes, because I wasn't sure if I was going to actually review it or not, but yes, that was in my notes I jotted down. They arrest all these kids, they have their the Robins, they have their utility belts, mask still on. What kind of like circus police?
I mean, it's like the first thing you would do, even if
fingerprint them.
Yeah, you take off their mask, you get a photo, you get their fingerprints, you get probably like a lock of hair so you can do DNA testing or, you know, something. But they're just throwing them in there with all of their gear, all of their stuff, and of course Robin takes off his mask and he happens to have like some little like skeleton key explosive dart thing that's hidden inside his mask, because that makes sense. And, you know, nobody notices that he pulls his mask off and he shimmies this thing out and pops it out. And they're in this room with all these cages hanging, but of course there are these, like, 10-gallon drums full of risk of high explosion, random chemicals in every corner, you know, because where else do you put volatile chemicals? But in a room where you're hiding wannabe superheroes.
But of course. So of course,
you know, so they attack one of them, and it was just like, I'm just reading this thing, and I'm just like offended. Like, I'm offended at how bad this story is.
I love it.
I mean, this is the crossover thing that they're going to do. I'm not someone who reads, you know, all the Robin books. Mm-hmm. Maybe I might go back and read the Robin Moore, you know, chapters if my Detective Comics crosses over and I'm like, oh, this is a good story. This was not a good story. Like, this makes me not only not want to read the rest of the Robin Moore stuff, but it makes me mad that I wasted my time reading this chapter. Like, this was horrible. This is like Walking Dead bad.
Oh, no!
I mean, this is, you know, Walking Dead with no zombies is as bad as this issue of Detective Comics. I was just, I was, yeah. Now, maybe the other books with the other authors are much, you know, better and more thought out than this particular one, but, I mean, this was just awful.
I say read Grayson 15.
So, okay, which brings up a question to me. Because I was going to read Red Hood Arsenal until I realized it was a Robin Ward tie-in. Is it that closely tied to where you have to read it? Okay.
It's more of a story of Arsenal and Joker's daughter.
Okay, well, half of that equation is not great.
I haven't read much with her, but Scott LaBelle writes her fine here. She's almost like Harley Quinn-ish.
She was palatable last issue, but I was like, eh, that whole thing is...
Okay, so you read last issue, too?
Yeah. I've been reading this book, so...
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, cool. And it looks like another, like, story arc starting next issue, because it said, like, something of part one starts next issue. Mm-hmm. So I need to get an interview with Scott Liddell and find some, get some clues on what's to come. Things I need to do.
Well, don't read Detective Comics, so I'll just tell it.
Oh, no!
If you already bought it, take it back.
Yeah, it's funny, like, why is this a fill-in? Because wasn't the... Who was just took... They got a new creative team. Was it Patrick Gleason or... I always get the guys mixed up. Who's doing Batman Superman?
Batman Superman is Greg Pak.
Mm-hmm. Batman Wonder Woman, or that's Superman Wonder Woman, isn't it? Who's doing Superman Wonder Woman? Because I think that was the original... That's the writer...
That was... Soul originally.
Yeah, but he left. Who was the team on Batman and Robin? Gleason was the artist, who is now the artist and writer of Robin, Son of Batman.
All right, Superman, Wonder Woman is Tomasi.
Yeah, Peter Tomasi, I think.
Tomasi. Okay, sure. There you go.
Yeah, I think he took over as the writer, and then the guy that was doing the art on the Armor Wars, Secret Wars book was the artist.
Yeah, okay, he did the last issue of Detective, at least. Because Manipal was doing it for a while.
Yeah, they left a while ago, him and...
Yeah, so Tomasi's been doing it for a couple issues, and then he disappeared on this issue of Detective.
Yeah, maybe it was just to just have someone else do this Robin one, and then Tomasi and Sinara come back.
Ugh.
Detective's kind of just been languishing for me.
That reminds me, did anybody read the Batman Turtle?
Not yet.
Nope.
I'm so far behind on that, man.
I'm up to date, but I haven't read this week's.
I'm trying to find the cover. What did I do with the cover? Well, blank one.
Not enough book order?
Well, I thought it was, but apparently it's not. There must be... It might be under, like, BM TMNT or something, so... Oh, yeah, it is. It totally is under BM TMNT, so...
Oh, since you've got that cover up, who read Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Not me.
Nope. I did.
I got a couple pages into it before the show. I just had to stop, of course, to record.
It's there. It exists.
Oh, no.
It's a comic that they made.
Jeez. Turns out a roll tonight, man.
Well, no. Look, this is not Detective Comics bad, okay? This is The problem is there's nothing special about it. Like, there's nothing that good. There's no... Wayne Tech has some sort of technology that the Foot Clan wants to steal. So, of course, the Turtles are trying to stop the Foot Clan, and because it's Wayne Tech, Batman shows up, and that's how they all come together for this crossover. And at the same time, Killer Croc decides he wants to steal the Batmobile. So you've got a random Batman villain thrown in. But I mean, honestly, like, that's it.
For the same You're stupid.
Like, I thought for sure there was going to be some sort of, like, the Krangs from Dimension X find a new universe that they try to bust into, which is what draws the Turtles into this universe and, you know, find all these superheroes and whatever. But no, it's just like a random Foot Clan wants to steal this technology. The Turtles are there. Batman shows up. That's it. Like, that's your whole story.
Why make it difficult?
I'm about to say, as plots goes, I guess that's the more plausible to get them together.
But the problem is, though, there's no... Batman spends most of the issue. Some lady goes, you know, we were attacked by these ninjas, but then these other things showed up to save us, and they look like turtles. And so then you've got, like, three pages of Batman going, turtles. And, like that's literally Batman's dialogue. It's just him going,
Bale just came in here.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I don't even need a laugh track. This is hysterical.
There's for taking these two franchises, and after, you know, what, 30 years that the Turtles have been, is it 30 years, 40 years? How long have the Turtles been around now? Since 85, 83?
Let's try not to count how old we are. Go on. But by the way, Toy Story is 20 years old.
Oh.
Yeah.
But this reminds me of, do you remember when they did the Batman Spawn Batman?
Oh, crossover? My God, of course.
Where it was just like a whole lot of nothing. It's just like the two characters are just happen to be there, and they both happen to be in the same story. But
at least there was a, wasn't there, whatchamacallit, an ongoing ramification from the crossover in that the scarf and the Batarang and Spawn's face remained?
Did it? I don't know.
Yes.
I
was Spawn, but... Yeah, like he had a Batarang stuck in the middle of his face, and he had to lace it together with the shoelace, if you remember.
Okay, so what did that do for Batman, though?
I don't know. It didn't do anything for Batman. It did something for Spawn.
Well, see. But, I mean, this feels the same way, where it's just like, okay, you got your random characters to show up, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel like there's anything important happening, and, you know, they're just fighting the Foot Clan, and Killer Croc's going to try to steal the ugliest-looking Batmobile in the history of Batman comics, and that's going to be it. Like, there's really... not a lot to it.
FYI, 1984.
84.
Yeah.
Turtles first appearance.
2004. Mm-hmm. So 30 years. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, wasn't the 30th last year? Weren't they doing that big event to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Turtles?
Probably.
That big war. It's got to be a war, obviously. Remember
war.
That?
Like, war stuff?
War.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, that was their big 30th anniversary thing.
Yeah, well, Batman Turtles is not their big 31st anniversary. I mean, again, it's like, it's not, and I feel kind of bad because I am giving it a really hard time,
sure.
But part of that is the expectations of, you know, this grand crossover for the first time in the history of the characters, but... I mean, it's just nothing special. Mm-hmm. It's not bad, but it's not blow you away good either. It's just
is it at least fun?
It's just another story.
It's not even fun? Wow.
Not really. I mean,
wow, that's a shame.
They don't do anything other than just have Batman go, turtles, and that's it.
I'm slightly surprised this is the
anniversary of his parents' murder. I got that far.
Wait, isn't it always the anniversary of his parents' murder
in Crime Alley?
Yeah.
It's a good excuse for stuff.
So, anyway.
That's true.
I mean, it's not the worst thing I read this week, thanks to Detective Comics, but...
I thought you were going to blame The Walking Dead. I know there was an issue out this week.
Yeah, no zombies. It sucked. Moving on.
Oh, my goodness.
I was going to ask you, did you read Star Trek Green Lantern, sir?
I have not. I'm actually an issue behind on it.
Oh, okay.
So, that's in my... No. Yeah, it's in my pile of stuff, like Deadpool I haven't caught up on yet, Bob's Burgers I still have an issue to do, and I've got the Star Trek Green Lantern sitting there. Gotcha. Although, there was the Justice League, Dark Side War.
Oh, the Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read that.
Oh, yeah, that did come out.
That was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It wasn't the most amazing thing I've ever read or anything like that, but it was still interesting to see what's happening with Lex Luthor. I mean, Justice League is finally coming back next week. Mm-hmm. We're finally going to get issue 46 to follow up on this stuff. If you remember...
Oh, yeah,
I forgot. Yeah, a whole bunch of these came out real quick, and then suddenly they just kind of stopped for several weeks, and now finally the Lex Luthor is out because the issue 46 is finally coming out.
Yeah, I was about to say blame Secret Wars, but I enjoyed this, and I think I didn't enjoy it up until pretty much the end of the issue when I understood who Luthor had been sort of partnered with throughout this issue and what that character's motivation was. And once that all kind of folded together, I understood the issue as a whole right as I got to the end. And I think I found myself looking back on the issue with a fonder memory after getting to the end, as opposed to kind of slogging my way through like these flashback memories of Lex kind of dealing with, you can't ask for help. You know, you have to be tough. You have to figure things out on your own, you know. Like, thanks a lot, Papa Luthor.
Well, I mean, he's telling you as you're reading the book. You got to figure it out on your own. Get through it. He's telling you, finish the story.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of felt the same way where I didn't really understand, like, what's the point of this? Like, you're going through this entire issue. Like, okay, where are we going? Can we get somewhere? Can we do something with the character? Like, we got a lot of flashbacks of how much he hates Superman, but I kind of knew that already. is this gonna get somewhere? And I wondered at first I was kind of confused why Jimmy Olsen was at the bottom of a well.
That's true.
I had to remember. Oh, right.
You're right.
Had red hair as a kid.
You're right.
I thought he was born bald. I keep forgetting.
So apparently Lex Luthor is powered by Unity, which is only a reference you would know if you into video gaming a good bit. So if somebody watches the video, get that and get back at me.
Well, the other funny thing is that I learned from TV this week that Lex Luthor looks like the guy who founded Facebook.
Oh!
But we won't get into that right now. We can wait another time.
Dirt, you didn't. I was about to say you missed out on that conversation last week about the trailers. Do you want to touch on that real quick?
I hate Lex Luthor, but everything else looks cool. I mean, like, I seriously, I don't like Ben Affleck. You know, I've just never been a fan of his acting. But whatever, he's Batman. I'll get over it. I hate it, but I'll get over it. But man, that Lex Luthor is just terrible. Like, I don't get it.
Voice, or is it just everything?
Just everything about him. The way he's like hyper. The way he's
kind of manic. Yeah.
He talks like Schmidt. He talks like Schmidt from New Girl. Like, I don't understand.
Oh, I have no idea what that means, but that can't be good.
I do.
And so I just don't get it. Like, I just don't understand why Lex is like this, because it makes sense. It's almost like they wanted to do some other random character. They had something else in mind, and they said, no, you got to do Lex Luthor. And so instead of rewriting it, they just said, okay, well, wherever we have this other character's name, just cross it out and write Lex Luthor, because it just doesn't fit with Lex Luthor at all. Unlike this book, which fits perfectly into Lex Luthor's storyline. So,
interesting.
Anyway.
Interesting.
The one last DC book, and then we can move on to whatever else you want to talk about.
You went mute.
You're mute.
Yep.
What about now?
Yes, you're back.
Okay. All right. Batman, Superman. If you want to talk about Marvel with the misleading covers, then this Batman, Superman is just as bad as
this. You're absolutely correct. I did read this.
This cover has absolutely nothing to do. I mean, I guess Red Hood's in it for like five panels. So, I mean, technically it's not a total lie, but this scene is absolutely nowhere in this book at all. And it felt like, going back to the Batman 47 conversation about how they're rebuilding Bruce Wayne and getting ready to bring him back as Batman, it appears. Right. This book was all about Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne, and here's Commissioner Gordon as this new Batman, and can he be trusted and whatever? Things, you know, looks like maybe they get along, but Bruce Wayne and Superman, that's really the bromance.
Right,
and
they're brothers.
And it was like Bruce Wayne. Oh yeah, Jim Gordon's here. He's the new guy, but Bruce Wayne. And there's that Jim Gordon guy again, and back to Bruce Wayne, and we'll end the book on Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So I mean, this was really like, okay, everybody, get Jim Gordon out of your mind because Bruce Wayne's coming back. Bruce Wayne. That was the point of Batman Superman 27.
I love it.
All right.
Is there anything else? I think we're in rapid fire.
Yeah.
I'll throw out one. There's one book I think I have that we haven't touched on that I can do rapid fire on, and that's Hercules number 2. And I know that I was a big fan of Hercules number 1, and I still like the book. This issue is kind of a letdown after what I enjoyed in the first issue. I know that Tim mentioned that he wasn't sure what I saw in issue number 1, but some of it kind of carries over into issue number 2. A lot of Hercules kind of reaching a point where he's matured to a certain extent. We get a lot more of Hercules' updated tactics when it comes to dealing with giants. You know, some of his foes from myth. He's kind of dealing with them in a new way because he's fighting on the streets of New York as opposed to the plains or wherever the empty spacious areas of Greece, in early civilization. So I enjoyed this book. It's a lot of fun because I think it's pretty well written. You know, I just like the way the story is being told. The writer is one half of the Guardians of the Galaxy team that kind of relaunched the Guardians. That's Dan Abnett. The art team is Luke Ross and Emilio Laizo. Again, the color, we were talking before about the effects of digital color. I think digital color does a lot for this book. It definitely does pop a lot of the art off the page. Luke Ross has always had a pretty good hand At art, there's a couple of, you know, and I don't know if this is the second artist that I mentioned, Laizo, but towards the back half of the book, there's a distinct change in style, and you know, we get some developing. Let's put it this way: we have the appearance of, I guess who the big bads are for the first story arc. We don't; they're not revealed as of yet. They're only in shadow, but you know, the ball is in motion for revealing who the big bad for the opening arc of Hercules is. Honestly, I like I just like Abnett's writing of Hercules and his treatment of the character. It's very sharp. Maybe it does help to have read a lot of Hercules' adventures when he was just really portrayed as like this bumbling oaf. You know, and they poke fun of, you know, they poke fun of his old costume and the way he used to be, and, you know, just the way he was generally written. And it's a refreshing take on the character, and it's another, you know, maybe it's me kind of coming to grips with some of these characters possibly maturing slightly, like Peter Parker. And that's what we have with Hercules. You know, it's kind of cool to see, you know, Hercules kind of open up a new, open up a new door and kind of explore this, you know, being a hero in this particular way. Rapid fire. Go. I think that's it for me.
Birthright number 12.
Oh. Sorry, what?
Wait, what was that?
I was going to do mine right quick. It's Birthright number 12 from Image Comics, Joshua Williamson. I'll look at the artist's name here in a second.
Present.
But, Andrea something, right?
Bressan.
Andre Bressan. And let's see, it's the Mikey and his brother are using some magical knives to search for another mage. This, I guess, FBI or police agent is trying to find Mikey's parents to help them find the kids. And there's a nice little surprise at the end where we find out a secret identity of one of the mages from lore. So the saga continues.
Wait, saga? Not birth? No, you knew it. No, never mind. So Spider-Gwen number 3, I guess, is before I try to figure out my click. Spider-Gwen number 3, Spider-Woman shows. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. Gwen, from her own universe, comes to the 616 and meets up with pregnant Jessica Drew and have a little powwow tete-a-tete, which was actually pretty cool, at least the back and forth between them. And then she goes back to her own dimension time period, which I guess they're now calling Earth GS from what they have designated, and meets up with Mary Jane and the crew at her at some log cabin. Harry Osborn shows up, who's been away for a while since Peter's death in that universe, and they have a little talk. And as one would expect with an Osborn showing up, so does a goblin.
Gotcha.
Spoiler alert. But,
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. That's about it for that.
How was Starfire 7? Not going to bring that up? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was good, actually. well, because I kind of halfway read it while we were talking, so that was...
Oh, okay. I was just looking at your list to see if you wanted to cover any more of your... for Rapid Fire, like there's a Rocket Girl number 7, too.
Yeah, yeah. So Starfire was actually pretty decent. It was... Grayson shows up in his book. Apparently, Starfire and her friend Saul is out on some yacht, boat, cruise thing, just chilling. And Dick Grayson just happens to show up after somebody in a briefcase that they were carrying. So, somewhere halfway in between there, they intersect and, you know, they have a talk while trying to chase down and get whatever briefcase going on. And they talk about, you know, hey, Dick, you've been dead, you know, this and that other. And they kind of hash that all out, which wasn't really hashed out because, as people seem to know, they used to be lovers and that kind of mess. So they apparently at the end of the book they rekindle old flames. Maybe.
Oh. Interesting. I'll have to read that.
I need to check and see if Starfire is in the Titans Hunt series.
Didn't she show up in like the first one? I can't remember. I think I skimmed that one, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So.
In issue but, 3. Yeah. I need to see if issue 3 is coming out. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. No, that was a bad day. It was a pretty good read. You know, like I said, seeing them two together again was kind of cool. You know, there's that. And Rocket Girl Don't Save Her. Not much I'd like to say about that one because I don't think anybody else is reading this book here anyway, especially. But it's just good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't Rocket Girl start like 2 years ago or something? And
kinda, and it took a break and they just came back like last. Okay. I think either this issue or last issue, I think, that came back. Yeah, I think it was last issue that came back last month or so. So, yeah, this is them kind of coming back and she's now, I guess, trapped in the quote-unquote present. Not in her future, and she's just trying to get her gear back from the company that has confiscated it, you know. And she does that. She gets out and starts helping people again, you know, after all of the other stuff that's going on. But then there's people in the future that's trying to help on that side, you know, because the company that's still taking over kind of took over everything and closed the team police force. So mm-hmm. they're trying to cook up a plan, I guess, either to try to get the young back or get to her or something. I'm not sure what they're doing. That's about it.
Let's see. I did read Street Fighter.
Street Fighter!
Yep.
I love it.
And it attempts to make it accessible to people who have not read the series. This is continuing, like, I don't know, this would be like issue 50 or something of the actual series that's been coming out from Udon over the years. So this tries to give you some background and recap. But the problem is it recaps the same thing like four times. So it's like if you didn't catch it the first time, it gives it to you a second time. And then it has a conversation with somebody else. Hey, what about what happened with blah, 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 blah. And it's, yeah, the exact same thing they just talked about. Mm-hmm. So it really, I don't know, it works a little too hard to hammer home that storyline. The artwork is beautiful, though. I mean, it looks like they took stills from an anime, even though they didn't. This is all original artwork for this comic. Mm-hmm. It looks like these are animation cells. It's very pretty to look at. I'll give the next issue a shot and see if the story moves forward at all. Mm-hmm. But this was 9/10 of this issue was a thinly veiled attempt to cover recaps in conversations just to get you up to speed on the story instead of just moving it forward and giving you the information as you need it. So I don't know if that was just kind of a bad choice of storytelling on their part or if it's really written with, you know, like 10-year-olds in mind that have to be, you know, kind of walked by hand through the storyline. We'll see how in the next issue if maybe the story gets a little bit better or not. But I'll give it at least another try on the next issue to see if the story moves forward. But the artwork is very beautiful. Like, I can't say it enough. Just to pick it up and to just, like, flip through it and look at the character artwork is just incredible in this
book. Cool. Yeah, it usually is for those books.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's see. Is there anything else for Rapid Fire before we go to Clicks of the Week?
No, not for me.
I'm done.
Clicks of the Week.
Yeah, I kind of spoiled my Click of the Week real early in the show. Real, real early. Mine is Secret Wars number 8 by Hickman and Esad Ribic. I love the issue. There's a lot of great scenes in the issue. I love the ending, which is not an ending, but it's just an ending to the issue. It's just a great, great, you know, bit of scenery that that Roddy Cat, you know, definitely properly pointed out that it invokes a great scene from an earlier run on Avengers that I definitely love. So
my Click of the Week is also Secret Wars number 8.
Wow!
There were a lot of things that angered me this week and made me upset to read comics. But this was not one of them. This was actually very satisfying, and yep. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it felt like, you know, they said they had split 7 and 8 into two issues, and I kind of felt let down by 7 because it didn't feel like it really went anywhere because everything that was going somewhere happens in 8.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed 8 quite a bit.
See, now I'm just stuck. We're stuck waiting for 9. I can't believe we have to wait, you know, more than a month for 9.
We have to wait until next year. Think about that. This series was supposed to be over in August, and we have to wait for next year.
Wait, August? Is that what it was originally solicited for?
Was it August or September?
September.
Yeah. I think it was August, and then they got pushed back to.
It was going
to
be the same.
It was the same
week whenever Invincible Iron Man number 1 and that stuff was going
to
launch.
Right, because it was supposed to end before October, and then they were like, well, hold on, we got a new. Well, one, it got pushed back. Then it was like, well, we got another book coming through, so.
That's funny.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to trifecta this and say 8. Because Ultimate was good, and the couple of other books that were pretty decent reads, but yeah, Secret Wars number 8 just kind of had a total package going on. So.
Alright. I am going with...
Tim is the dissenting vote.
You gotta ruin it, Tim.
I do. Grayson number 15. You got a 5 out of 5 for me on my review.
Which I would have known if you had told me about it.
Send that link.
The links will be sent.
There's Grayson.
So yeah, Grayson 15, part 2 of Robin War.
Apparently nice. The good part.
It is. It's very good. Read it. I don't want you to be sullied by Detective Comics 47. Leave a That's bad funny. Taste.
I'm just annoyed that there's a Gotham Academy issue that I really don't want to read because I'm not interested in the Robin War stuff.
It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like it, like you said, it's this filler issue. I'm looking at the cover and I'm like, oh man.
It's a Robin. It's a Gotham Academy story.
All right.
Okay, which I hear are usually pretty good, so.
Yeah, it's normally good, although it is getting closer to the chopping block for my physical pull list. Mm. You know, in the interest of cutting back, you know, things that are, you know, mostly fun to read, you know, cutting the pull list down to that. Sometimes Gotham Academy doesn't quite make it, so you know it's getting closer to the chopping block. We'll see. Mm. That'll be a whole write up. That might be a regular segment or write up. Like, what did I chop from my pull list this week and what or this month, and what did I add? So
cool. All right.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in live or on recorded audio or video podcast to this episode of Comic Chronicles.
Yay!
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Doug is at PCN_dirt and PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yay!
And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Yep, everybody had on glasses. Had to get put some on.
And with that, there will be some type of episode next week. Not sure.
Yeah, we have to figure out. We will announce it beforehand. We will figure it out.
Yeah. So just stay tuned to at least CBCron at CBCron to know when. The next episode will be recorded.
Everybody's got to wear glasses. Tim, you got to find some shades or something.
I got my glasses on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got those glasses too, but you got to put
my 3D glasses on next week watching Star Wars.
Yeah, I was going to tell where I got those from, but it's already late, so I'll bring it up somewhere else.
I need to actually see if I bought tickets for the 3D show or not. I can't remember. But anyway, We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace! Good evening. Would you believe it? It's done.